All right, with all of that out of the way, Chris, do you want to call us to order?
Yes, I call the meeting to order of the Aspen Tree Commission. Let's see. So first up is approval of minutes of last month. Anybody have a chance to review those and make a motion?
Make a motion to accept them as written.
I'll second. All those in favor? Show of hands.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next we're on to liaison reports. Stephen's not here. Peter, Parks and Rec, liaison report, please.
Yes, thank you. We are breaking ground on the Japanese garden next week, so we'll be fencing it and starting to take some trees down, those that need to come out, moving others, and it'll be pretty, quite a construction site, equipment in there and such. So just be ready for that. If any of you haven't been there just lately, it's been real beautiful with the fall color. So check it out while you can. And that's going to be changing. A fall color, fortunately, is going to be getting past its peak too. So it's a good time to do that.
We're talking year, 2 years?
Like 2 years, I think, is the estimate until it's completely finished. Yes, it's a long process.
We might have the election results by then.
Yeah. And otherwise, I just wanted to thank Kat for her work on the mistletoe. And as Chris was saying, there are definitely some good reasons to take it out before it overwhelms trees and causes failure. So I looked at some of what you did and it looks good. Thanks. And has your poison oak improved, I hope?
Yeah. And then I fell in the creek and sprained my thumb the other day.
Oh no.
So I've been sidelined from my hobby, unfortunately.
That's tough work, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's been much appreciated.
I enjoy it. It's weirdly satisfying, and
great.
Cool.
And just to add, from what I've seen, it does weaken branches, and if the mistletoe does die, which eventually it kind of does once the branch dies, then it opens up a zone for rot to, decay to get into the branch. And yeah, climbing above mistletoe is, kind of a leap of faith. And
right.
And then also, it's its own plant, so it's producing its own sugars, but it's essentially using water that the tree has already sequestered. It's also used in macronutrients and micronutrients. And they've done samples of mistletoe, and it's really high in, potassium. So that could potentially lead the tree to be lacking in potassium, which of course comes from fire. So, or fire helps. Anyway, that's my bit on that. But thank you so much. I think it's so cool you're doing that.
Okay.
Aaron, anything from the city?
No, I don't have much of an update from community development. But I would add one item that in terms of attendees and the order of operations, the one person that we do have attending is from item C on the agenda. And so you might want to move that to the top of the order.
Yep. I was thinking the same. So everybody else is okay with that. I'll read our procedures and we can do that one first. So any other updates or anything that you know about?
One update that I did want to bring to everyone's attention. Thank you for actually poking at me until it came to mind. The project at 270 Laurel with the large tree that we were all hoping might be able to be saved. And ultimately, your recommendation was to save it if it could be, but should it prove necessary, we phrased it in that way. The wind event that we had, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, apparently caused a couple of major limbs to fail up high, and the project arborist came in and basically made the determination that it was sufficient enough that they should go ahead and remove it. And since that permission had been granted conditionally, they went ahead and did it.
It's still there, though, unless they removed it this afternoon. It was there this morning.
So that was a note that Derek gave me last week. I don't know if they haven't moved on it yet. If you want me to get more detail from the project arborist for you, I'm more than happy to.
No, I'll have a look at it when I walk past tomorrow morning. I hadn't noticed any of those branches coming down. I walk past it like 3 or 4 times a day.
Sure. And that's not in my neighborhood, and I hadn't taken an opportunity to go past it. But if you want me to get additional information from the project arborist, I'm more than happy to do that.
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Okay, we'll go ahead and move into the reviews. I'll go over our procedures here. This is the time and place for the Tree Commission review portion of the land use public hearing. If you wish to speak at the hearing, please keep your comments and testimony limited in scope to issues, comments, or concerns pertaining to the landscaping and trees. The following procedure will be used at this hearing. Number one, the public hearing will be open, and those interested in stating their positions regarding the matter to be considered will be invited forward to speak. During the public hearing portion, all who wish to give testimony regarding the specific application are encouraged to do so. If you wish to speak for, against, or comment in any way, please come forward to the table at the appropriate time, give your name, address, and make your statement. Secondly, at the beginning of the public hearing, staff will present its report on the action and conditions of approval. At this time, commissioners will have the opportunity to ask staff questions. Third, after the staff report, the applicant and applicant's representative will have 15 minutes to present the proposal. The commissioners may ask questions of the applicant or applicant's representatives without affecting the 15 minutes allocated for the applicant's presentation. Four, other members of the audience will be allowed to speak regarding the application and shall be limited to 5 minutes each. Those wishing to testify shall be called forward and give testimony. Five, the staff will then be given an opportunity to respond to any question of the commission or any matter which has been raised. And lastly, the applicant will then have 5 minutes of rebuttal time, after which the public hearing portion will be closed. So I will call to order Planning Action Tree 2020-00131. This is item C on the agenda, subject property 100 Walker. The applicant is Christopher Brown of Architect Design and Architecture for Ashland School District. Description is a request for tree removal permit, not a modification of a recently approved planning action T1-2020-00090 to remove a multi-trunk 22-inch diameter madone tree from the Ashland Middle School, John Muir Outdoor School campus at 100 Walker Avenue. The tree, number 132 on the plan there, had been previously identified to be preserved and protected as part of the recent planning approval for renovations in addition to the school. However, as construction documents were finalized, it was determined that a new ramp was needed at this location, necessitating the tree's removal. I should ask, too, do we have any site visits on this one? I did not get over there, and don't know that Asa did either. No, Kat?
No.
Eric, did you look at this by chance? Okay. Well, because we got Jane here to walk us through. Any abstentions, party contact, when you sit it out? Okay, Aaron, staff report, please.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is that there was an email that I forwarded out to the Tree Commission this afternoon from Jane. And I was looking for clarification because the original application materials didn't specify that it was for accessibility specifically. But this whole project is one of the main objectives of it is for accessibility in terms of ADA at the school. And so I wanted to make sure that that was in the record.
Great, thank you. Okay, well, Jane, if you'd like to walk us through what your application or just give a little background, that would be great, and that'll be the time for it.
Hi, thanks. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So the original planning application, we did a tree removal permits for a couple of other trees. Met with you all in person, and after the construction documents for the project came through, it turned out that there was a door to the John Muir Outdoor School that was in conflict with the original ramp that was proposed. So it had to be moved over in order to get ADA access between the two schools. It's the primary route where the students and staff will be kind of passing between the two schools. So if you wanted to drive by and look at it, it's in between two of the wings of Ashland Middle School in the 1966 section of the campus on the Walker Avenue side. And it's a madrone tree, and it's very, very close to the building. We were going to try to save it, but with the ramp relocation, I don't think it's feasible.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Jane?
What's the ramp going to be made of?
Concrete. Poured in place concrete ramp. It's just the minimum standards for ADA accessibility. It's a switchback layout coming from the uphill side, which is the John Muir Outdoor School side, with the, I believe it's a 5x5 landing, and then heading south, another landing, and then heading back north again, kind of a switchback against the building.
Did you guys at all look at possible options of doing like an elevated ramp to potentially preserve the tree?
Can you clarify what you mean by elevated ramp?
Like an aluminum or steel ramp that's elevated by posts.
The site topography. Yeah, we did look at some options like that, but the site topography is a major constraint. Essentially, the whole sidewalk would have to be elevated too in order to kind of get around that tree. I did include a plan in the application. I don't know if you have that in front of you. It would help to.
Yeah, we all probably have that, Jane.
Sheet L1.3 and L0.3 were included along with L0.1 in the tree commission packet.
You have a page number?
This should be the very last page before the Williamson Way street tree removal, the 11 by 17.
Okay. Somewhere. Okay. I have to download it because it's not showing on my.
Remind me, Jane, you have quite a few new trees going in here, right?
Oh, yes. I forget the exact number, but over 150 new trees. And L1.3 is the sheet that will give the most detail on the proposed layout.
So the ramp is that curving path, is that correct?
No, on the opposite side of the building there, Asa.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, there is a red box around the section in question.
We don't get color, but it's on the
okay, a dash
on the north side, right? Not the building.
Yeah, on the left side, top left of the sheet. So So the eastern doorway is at John Muir Outdoor School, with a 5-foot landing off of the corner of that building, and then the switchback ramp kind of going to the south. The madrone tree you can see on the previous sheet, which is L0.3, and that shows an overlay of where that ramp kind of conflicts with tree number 132, which is highlighted. So existing, there's a breezeway between these two buildings, and just a single ramp going between them, and it's very steep and not ADA accessible. So the breezeway is being removed, and that existing madrone tree, number 132, I'd say it's less than 3 feet away from that existing breezeway. And if you go back to the previous page with that dashed box around the proposed design, you'll see on the north side there is an entrance, a roll-up entrance door to a lower room in the John Muir Outdoor School. So originally we were trying to make the ramp work on the north side in order to save the tree, but that door proved to be the issue.
Do you have madrones in your planting plan for new trees?
My experience is they do very poorly transplanted.
Oh, that's a shame. I just planted two this year.
I tried one in my yard too, and it didn't work out. But I rarely see them. I think I'm planting plants. They'll pop up naturally, no problem. But try to dig one up and move it, it would be an issue. Do landscapers concur with that? Eric's grinning, but I can't hear him.
The people at Plant Oregon seem to think that it'll do okay, but they're selling me a tree also. So.
They are, and I bought one from them, and it was maybe 3 feet tall, and they encouraged me to get a smaller one because even at that height, they don't do so well.
Yeah, mine's like this big.
Yeah, so that's what you want. That's worth a shot.
That is my experience as well. I've never had a native madrone planted at a good size make it, unfortunately. And all of the trees proposed for this project are, you know, proposed at a caliper, so that there will be shading parking lots and play areas within, you know, the next few years, which is his goal.
Yeah, sounds to me like it needs to be down.
Say again, Eric. I'm sorry.
It sounds to me like the tree needs to be taken out to comply with the ADA standards.
Yeah, so this being, Jane, you're our first public participant on a Zoom meeting, so I'm going to try to do the whole agenda thing. So if anybody has any more questions of Jane or Aaron at staff, then we can close the public hearing portion and do our deliberation thing. And if you guys are okay with that, Robert's rules of whatever. Okay, well, we'll close the public hearing portion and Eric thinks it should go because it's ADA. And Ace has got something.
Yeah, I just want to let everyone know that for the past few months, our internet's been really poor in the evenings. So I'm getting a little bit of audio gappage where I'm not hearing everything everyone's saying. So just be aware that I might not hear everything you say or that you might not hear everything I say. But right now it's doing good. So just want to let you know that.
Do you have any thoughts while you have the floor, Asa? Any strong feelings on this? This one?
Well, yeah, I mean, usually when it comes to ADA, like, we don't really have any say anyway, you know, the planning just kind of, you know, the ADA kind of trumps everything anyway. So, you know, if there's a lower room that they're using, I didn't quite hear that part totally, but the ramp is going to the west back towards Walker Street, I think I heard, due to a lower room. So it sounds like it wouldn't be able to go to the east, you know, away from Walker Street. That would be one way to get it away from the tree potentially. But, you know, L0.3, it's like smack dab right there. So being that it's, you know, a medium-sized madrone, you know, it's just going to get bigger. And I feel like eventually the school is going to want to take it out for one reason or the other, you know. So, yeah, I kind of, you know. And I also didn't see the tree. You know, if it was an amazing tree, I might be fighting a little harder for it. But
it is a pretty nice tree, but unfortunately, probably can't be saved.
And just going on my recollection, when we originally saw this one, it seemed like they're going to good lengths to preserve a number of the big mature trees on site and planting a lot of new ones. I guess I'd be inclined to be okay with it, but I accept it as a price of improvement.
I'm on the same page.
Yeah. All right, I'll go ahead and make a motion that the application be approved as submitted.
I second.
All those in favor, yeah. Show of hands. Okay. Unanimous passing. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Have a good night, you all.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's go back to item A. Call to order, planning action, tree 2020-00128. This is at 485 Clinton Street. Owner applicant is Dolly Travers for Riverwalk HOA. There's a request for approval to remove two conifer trees from a common area at the Riverwalk subdivision. The application materials indicate that the trees are in poor health, as indicated by lack of root flare, visible canker wounds, and a pronounced wound. The application explains that the HOA feels that these trees pose a fire hazard as well. Any site visits on this one?
I went last time it was on the agenda.
Yeah, I did as well.
Same with me.
Anybody need to abstain? Okay, staff report.
Did you say you needed to abstain? I'm sorry.
No. Said I visited it.
So this was on your agenda last month, and, you know, there were other applications on your agenda last month as well. And, you know, during COVID times, the staff advisor, myself, and one of the senior planners have been reviewing applications when we haven't had the benefit of your input. And, you know, the other applications last month, the one on Strawberry, many of those trees were either dead or dying. The one on Parker was a tree that really had already been practically removed before they called and ended up starting to go through the permit process. So we didn't have a problem processing those. But as staff was looking at this application, there really wasn't a feeling that there was a developed evidence in the record to make a claim that the trees were hazards. The HOA has also been working with the fire department. I don't know the full details of the walkthrough that the fire department did with them, but when I spoke to the public information officer, Katie Gimmel, her opinion was that if these trees were limbed up a little bit higher, that would prevent the ladder fuel problem that the fire department is most concerned about. And one of the things she shared with me was one of the things they saw in the Alameda fires. There's a lot of trees that are still standing where the tops got, singed, but the trees aren't dead and the whole tree didn't go. And So she really impressed upon me the fact that there's, when there are allegations of concern that the hazard being posed is from fire, the criteria also say that, you know, we have to make a finding that it can't be, the risk that it's being posed can't be relieved through pruning or other means. So anyway, staff was unwilling to approve the application based on the evidence. I spoke to the applicant and asked her if she wanted to go ahead and hold it over, have the benefit of it coming before the tree commission. I was actually expecting her to be in attendance. And, you know, it's possible that she joined late to the original link. I'm not sure what I can do to rectify that. But anyway, staff didn't feel that the decision could be made based on these materials, and we would look for the tree commission's recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I get clarity? Is it the homeowner that wants them removed or the HOA?
From my understanding, it is both the homeowner and the HOA. I haven't spoken to the property owner immediately adjacent to that common area, but it was communicated to me through her that it was a combined. They were really coming at it initially from a concern that those trees are all hazards and they wanted to remove them because of the fire risk. And then what the application ultimately came in was for two of them, one of them, which is leaning slightly, and the other one that has that canker and the lack of root flare.
And there is not a arborist report confirming all of these claims about illness and deformity and structural integrity?
Correct. There's no arborist report with this application.
Okay.
Can everyone hear me? Everyone else is kind of breaking up to me, but can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead, Asa. We can hear
you. Now.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I can't.
You know what? Maybe if I turn off my video and mute myself, it'll decrease.
Okay, it looks like Asa just dropped off the call entirely. And Kat, I think, is still here, but just muted in hiding.
No, I'm not in hiding. I just, sometimes if someone's having a connectivity issue, if you stop your video, if you don't need to be visible, it can decrease the amount of traffic and it makes it a bit easier for people with a bad connection.
Sure. All right. Asa, can you talk for us?
Yeah, sorry, my computer just booted me off, so this is the first I've heard. Regarding to Kat's question, I didn't see that it, really any of these had any sort of grounds of truth in them at all. You know, during the windstorm, the trees slammed into the house. It's like, really? They're actually kind of far away. You know, if they had that much rock, I think they would have uprooted by now. Trees too close to the home. Well, why'd you plant them that close? You know, a lot of those issues can be relieved through pruning. You know, the fence is way more burnable than the tree. You know, the tree's full of water, which is like the fire department said, you know, which is why a lot of those didn't burn.
I'm with Asa. The fire department said they could be pruned and they'd be safe.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
What I'm saying is no expert anything saying that they can be saved. I don't think any of the science sheet, the observations they point to don't hold truck with me. And I don't know about you, Asa, but we're getting so many calls about people just really just think trees are inherently unsafe after the fires. And that's obviously not the case. I'm glad that the FireWise has been kind of making that point. I mean, the ignition source were the homes, not the trees. But so anyway, I've had this conversation a lot to walk people back that your house isn't going to burn down because you have a tree next to it. It's a really pretty row of Vanderwall. That's my take.
But I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I see a whole bunch of people of reasons that make it sound like it's a good idea, but none of them seem like actual facts. So my feeling is I'd rather them stay until they actually do seem like they're ill or distressed. At this point, they all seem healthy and growing vigorously. That whole lawn there is completely saturated and soaky swamp. If anything, they're probably going to end up with root rot.
Sounds like emotion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to not approve it and to keep the trees. Is that how you word it?
Yeah. Roughly, do you need to articulate any differently, Aaron? Does that work?
I would simply say to recommend denial of the application.
Okay. I make a motion to recommend denial of the application.
Second from Eric. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. I'm assuming Asa is on the same page, but he's frozen on my screen at the moment.
Yeah, well, he had expressed agreement at least.
Oh, he's gone again.
Nope, he's back. He's coming back. Oh. Asa, you were a thumbs up on that, right? Asa?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. You were in favor of denying that application, correct?
Yeah, I'm really not able to pick up much of what you guys are saying, if anything, sometimes, and then it keeps kicking me off. So if for some reason it kicks me off right when we're voting, just pretend I'm abstaining from voting. But
you need to get charter internet, Asa, unless you already do, of course.
Yeah, so if it kicks me off, just pretend I'm abstaining from voting. But yeah, I second what Kat's motion was to deny the application.
What do you think, Asa, if you try shutting down your video and just go to audio? Does that cut down on the bandwidth needed to communicate?
He looks like he's seriously contemplating your... Asa, can you hear me? Nope. Oh, I love Zoom. All right. Sounds like that one passed anyway.
Yeah. And it's... We'll have to figure something out because I have to abstain from one of these. But not yet. So, Aaron, you think we're okay to move on to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right, so I'll call to order Planning Action Tree 2020-00127. This is at 171 Oak Street. The applicant is Oak Street Cottages. The request for approval to remove one hazard tree on the property at 171 Oak Street. The tree is identified as a maple in the front yard. application material state that there's a hole at ground level and visible rock. If the tree were to fail, it would fall towards the street and posing a hazard. Site visits on this one? Anybody see?
Yeah, I went and had a look.
I did as well. Abstentions. Just in full disclosure, I looked at these trees months ago and provided a quote for the work. I've had no further contact with them, and they've not hired me. If everybody's okay with me weighing in or not, but just to make you aware of that.
Yep.
Staff report then.
Talking to Asa, trying to get him to dial in. Not much to report on this one. It's one of those applications where, you know, what the code says in terms of needing an arborist, not needing an arborist report, is the language is optional. It's the staff may require it. And this is one of those cases where, you know, the photos are pretty obvious that even to myself as a layperson, it's like, wow, that's pretty pronounced. So I try to make an effort to not, you know, cost the applicant additional monies if it's not necessary. And I thought that based on the evidence and the photos that it seemed to make a pretty good case for it. And that's about all I have to say on it.
And I'm sorry, everybody had a look at this one. Kat did. I'm pretty sure Asa did as well. We spoke before the meeting. We texted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no expert, but it definitely seemed sick to me. There was a lot of, like, dying off of the bark and cracking. I don't know. It didn't look healthy to me, but I don't know whether removal of one of those trunks would help, but I'm going to defer to you guys on this one, whether it needs to be removed or not.
And where is it? The Godista, is that?
I think it was a maple, an Acer up front, maybe a Norway. Pete, did you have a look at it?
I did. I didn't catch the species. It sure did look, like you say, like half of the circumference of the base was without bark and considerable rot. So yeah, it seemed like a no-brainer.
Oh, see ya. And they want to take it down, right? So I'll make a motion to approve the application.
A second.
Favor. So my only hesitation with things like that is setting a precedent. If it's a hazard tree and we usually require the whole ISA thing, this is obviously a common sense one. And that would just put my two cents in for that. But I'm also the guy that quoted it to do the whole permitting process. So, I didn't feel. Anyway.
Are you referring to that email from Stephen Jensen, maybe? About hazard tree?
No, it's like usually, you know, you're going through the planning process and you're, as the homeowner, you've got to hit these certain criteria and have an arborist statement and a pre-risk assessment and all of that. Sometimes we shy away just to set a precedent, but That's all I have to say about that. Obviously, not in great shape. Yeah, I guess the only one I have left is the street tree, which was submitted by me. We haven't talked about how to do abstentions.
Sorry, I was on the phone with Asa trying to fix that technical problem and really missed the bulk of your deliberations on the 171 oak tree. My apologies.
Approved.
I think Eric made a motion to approve. Kat seconded and unanimous pass. Nutshell.
Was there any substantive deliberation that I need to capture?
No, I made the comment about setting precedent, not doing things without following the ISA pre-risk assessment and all that. But.
Well, technically, we only require the ISA risk assessment form with street tree applications. I don't know why that is. I do, when I'm talking to arborists, strongly recommend them. But when we hand out a street tree removal application, it actually has that assessment form attached to it. And it's not necessarily as de rigueur as with regular removals.
Have to write that one down. I like
that.
Yeah. So, Chris, you were just saying you have to abstain from the next item on the agenda, correct?
Yes, which is the street tree.
Okay.
Do you have thoughts on how to do that? Should I just do that? Should I mute myself? Shut video off?
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to demote you to be an attendee, and you're going to go to be in a room where you can only hear, just like Jane was. And when we're done with it, we'll bring you back in as a panelist. All right. So, Asa, can you hear us? Okay, so we can't hear you, but at least you can hear us. That's something. So let's just go with that, and you can, hopefully your video feed holds up. Kat or Eric, would either one of you like to assume the role of chair to address this last permit?
Sure, I can. So we're looking at, street tree removal permit request PAT1-2020-00130 at 437 Williamson Way.
Correct.
And what is the staff report on that?
So the applicant is Canopy. The tree is decayed with multiple dead branches posing a potential hazard. It includes a completed ISA risk assessment form and a couple of photos showing, the multiple trunks and the related decay. And I would... just leave it at that.
Okay. Were there any site visits? Thumbs up if you visited ASA. Okay. Eric, did you visit?
No.
Okay. What about you, Peter? Did you get to?
I noticed the tree was also had been topped. It appeared. So that's another strike against it. It's a really, really poor, overall poor condition. Okay. Did you visit as well?
You know, I didn't visit, but I looked at it on Google Map, which I sometimes can get to actually have a pretty good look at a tree on that just to see if I need to come out. But it definitely, even on the Google Map, it looks terrible. So, I'm going to, Eric, you didn't go, but Asa, thumbs up if you think this is a good idea to approve the request or if you have concern. Yeah, okay. All right. So, Eric, did you want to make a motion on this? Do you have any conversation?
I make a motion that we approve the request based on what you guys are saying. If it's, especially what Peter said. So.
All right. Can I second that, Aaron?
Sure.
All in favor, say aye. Thumbs up, Asa. All right. Okay, that motion is passed.
Welcome back, Chris.
Okay, so I guess that's all of the reviews, Do we have anything under old business? Doesn't look like it. SEA discussion item, Mountain Meadows Council contact and dead tree definition.
Yeah, so I would speak to that briefly. There was a request for a tree removal in a common area at Mountain Meadows. And the definition in the code for a dead tree is very specific. And it goes on about being completely lifeless, devoid of any sign of life, et cetera. I mean, it's a really, really strict definition. And I told the gentleman that based on what he had provided me, he was going to need to get a tree removal application. He was very frustrated at the process that was before him to remove a tree that he thought was truly posing a hazard because most of it was dead, and truly was mostly dead. But there was a pretty significant lower branch that clearly had color to it, was still alive. And, you know, sometimes I hold a little too close to the code, I suppose. And that was what happened in this circumstance, because he was upset enough that he reached out to city council to talk about what a ridiculous rule that we have in place. Shortly thereafter, I got a call from my boss who said, I think we can call that tree dead enough. Steve Jensen, basically after that, sent me an email saying that perhaps this should be a discussion item for the tree commission to, I kind of wish he was here to tee it up, because he was the one who asked that we have it as a discussion item. And I'm not sure if his intention was for you to consider perhaps slightly amending that definition, or again, it's a discussion item, but he wanted you to at least be aware of it. It certainly made me more aware of when I'm working with applicants. It sort of recalibrated my definition for deadness. But, you know, it's a tricky thing when we've had problems. Specifically, you may recall that really large pine tree over on Oak Street that got taken down, and there was an inquiry by a concerned citizen. There was a code enforcement situation, and then the tree company said it was dead, so therefore it's exempt. And the same thing happened with those four or five pine trees along East Main where the telephone exchange is. And again, the same thing happened where it was like, hey, why are these trees being taken down? Code enforcement got involved. Of course, by then the work was, I mean, they were mostly cleaning up. And their answer was they were all dead. Now, they were in decline. And so it's a tricky thing, and it cuts both ways, because on one hand, you have tree professionals who are tree professionals and should be expected to, you know, evaluate whether a tree is alive or dead or not. And in a couple of situations, they've said, hey, I'm a tree professional, that tree was dead, so it's exempt. And then we have the reverse situation when it comes into something like an applicant saying, I need to cut down this tree, it's mostly dead. And you have someone like myself at the role of staff being a layperson saying, well, it looks a little bit alive to me, so let's have you go through a process that's going to take 4 to 5 weeks. And many citizens don't want to hear that. So that was the broad strokes of what happened and why this ended up on your agenda.
It seems to me that I would prefer to keep it as it is. I'd rather have a little bit more hesitation about removing trees than necessary. Mm-hmm. I think it puts arborists in a difficult position because there's a conflict of interest if it hasn't gone through a process. And I can imagine that it is a frustrating process if a tree seems obviously dead to someone, but you know, that's why we have experts, you know, looking at these trees and making calls on that kind of stuff. And yeah, you might have to wait a month, but isn't that worth it if a tree can be saved? That's my opinion.
Another thought that has crossed my mind as a potential remedy, and again, it would require a code change, and I haven't ushered through a code change with an advisory commission yet. It's certainly within the realm of your purview. Is that rather than having dead trees be exempt, have dead trees require a ministerial permit. And so that way, whoever the tree professional is, before they go and cut down that tree that they are saying is dead, staff at least has an opportunity to come out, look at it and go, oh, yep, the evidence is very clear that and you're good. And heck, it could even be a no fee or a very low fee type thing, but just by taking it out from a complete exemption, it at least then makes a mechanism for it to be looked at. Now, while that is a very insignificant change, it would still require an ordinance, a code update by ordinance. So that said, simple changes are easier than complex changes. So that's a potential remedy that I would just put out there.
I mean, in this case, Aaron, you kind of had the feeling that maybe the tree wasn't dead. So if you had made that amendment and you had gone out and got your eyeballs on it, would you have still felt comfortable making the call that, yeah, go ahead, cut down the tree? Or would he still be in the situation where he has to wait?
So I was really hemming tight to the definition of dead tree in the code. When I went and looked at it, I didn't for a moment think to myself, that tree's got a chance. It was very clear that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I've been in those situations too, on the other side of that, where the tree's 99.9% dead, but by the code, there's a little bit there. That would be my only 2 cents. And I don't know if it's in the code that says this. But the only other thing was maybe if it's, say, 80%, 70% dead, and the arborist, you can weigh in if at that point, if you've ever seen a tree come back at that point, it just puts in a little bit of that maybe not leeway or common sense, but a little bit of, yeah, just a little bit to play with there if need be. I've also, anytime we cut down a dead tree that I know to require a permit, I always take a picture of it.
And that,
you know, just so on if it comes up. I don't know if any of that, any or all of that would require ordinance change, but just as a guideline, especially for getting people saying, yeah, it was dead after the fact when it clearly wasn't.
So here's the definition of dead tree in our code. A tree that is lifeless. Such evidence of lifelessness may include unreasonable lack of foliage, brittle dry branches, or lack of any growth during the growing season.
Can't really prove the last one, but the other two are pretty obvious, although you can't go around snapping every branch on a tree.
I can't read what Ace is saying because it's backwards.
Don Redwood. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You're familiar with this one, right? It's a deciduous conifer. I've heard of unscrupulous tree guys. And so they lose their needles every fall.
Oh, yeah.
They look like they're dead. And guys will drive around, hey, your tree's dead. And we'll cut it down. Or someone that doesn't know, and oh, it was dead. It's exempt. I'll just cut it down and they're perfectly fine, healthy tree. Large or the same way. But,
so you're saying redwoods drop all of their.
Called a Don Redwood. There's also something called a bald cypress.
That's a sequoia.
Yeah.
That's the redwood. I believe it does that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them around the oval near North Mountain Park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one down near the pond. They're beautiful trees. And yes, they do look like they're dying when they're going into fall.
Yeah.
Jacksonville got some from Plant Oregon, so maybe 20 years ago. And they deemed that they were dead, and they cut them all down.
Oh,
and
no.
They came dead. And Bish said, what have you done? You know, and
much.
So, yeah, it could be a problem.
Yeah, it could be a problem. Which is why, yeah, you have staff visited or a tree person.
I had a quick question on the street trees. Does even a completely dead tree need a permit?
For street trees, I believe so, right, Aaron?
You know, for some reason, I'm doubting myself right now. But hang on one second. I can answer that pretty handily. I feel like with street trees, we do.
Good doggy.
Good.
Yeah, so on the street tree removal application, there are three different approval criteria: emergency, hazard, or dead. But it's, so it still needs a ministerial permit, even though the criteria is easier to meet, you know. And I don't know why we regulate street trees differently than we regulate trees on private property.
They're very different. I'm kidding.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, you know, is there some kind of, and I don't know this, but is there some accepted definition of a dead tree other than what Ashland has? I mean, you arborists. Is there some definition that you guys have?
I kind of like the city's one, but, and then sometimes too, it comes down to species, you know, and if you've got, say, a half-dead Leland cypress and it's full of bark beetle holes, it's, you know, that one's not coming back, but it's not technically completely dead yet. You know, it's in severe decline.
It should be.
Yeah, I haven't run across a better definition than what Aaron just said.
So that's something that maybe should be looked into. I mean, maybe there's, you know, something out there that we're not aware of. There probably is. Matter of fact, I'm going to look into that.
Worth a Google.
I'm Googling.
We could look in Hortus.
I don't think I caught that, Eric. What'd you say?
I said we could look at Hortus. I'm sure there's something in there that would just, you know, drive us all nuts. But I will look. I will, honestly, I'll look in Hortus and see if I can find something. That seems to be kind of the end all of everything, right? Isn't that the, I don't know of anything that's more descriptive than that.
The only other thing you might say, given the species and evidence of decay or beetles, there's little to no chance of the recovery of this tree. But that would, yeah, probably require a professional. But
Well, I certainly think it's good that that we're trying to protect people from just going in and saying, "Well, it's dead." Mm-hmm. I mean, I like what Kat originally said was like, "Hey, you know, what's wrong with waiting for, you know, a few weeks to save a tree?" You know,
and if it's an imminent hazard and a risk, then they can submit for that, right?
That's, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You got to go right from now. Exactly. They have that vehicle to use.
Right.
And how often does this come up, Aaron? Once or twice a year, maybe? And it's not like you're dealing with it all the time, right?
It truly isn't something that happens all of the time. No.
And it's maybe more a matter of someone just, you know, taking out their stress on a city clerk.
A lot of that going around.
Because we're all feeling a little impatient these days.
Well, and honestly, I'm probably the reason that it escalated to the council level, because one of the tools in my arsenal when I'm speaking to a really upset citizen who's going to the place of saying, well, who makes these rules anyway? A response that I have learned to lean against is to point them to the opportunities of public forum. But of course, you know, there's downsides to that too.
Well, I think it's worth us having this discussion. Sure. You know, it's, mm-hmm. As written, it seems like pretty sound practice to err on the side of protecting trees. And We're extremely swift to approve trees that we can see are obviously in decline. I mean, that maple on Oak Street, you know, there wasn't a lot of visible sign that it was in decline, but, you know, I mean, all the branches looked fine. It was just when you really inspected the base that you could see it. So I don't think we present too many obstacles for people if a tree is seriously on its way out. Yeah.
Yeah, I think leave it as is, huh?
Yeah.
Sorry, so lots of paperwork.
And then the next item is from Kat.
Right. So did you guys have a chance to read through the email exchange that I had with Megan at Wildlife Training? They're an organization that trains arborists in how to deal with wildlife. And I had sent her an email just asking, you know, saying that we were thinking about presenting some kind of, we were wanting to include a paragraph or two about best practices or resources for homeowners and arborists to prevent unnecessary suffering or illegal interference with wildlife. And she had replied with some really helpful, the laws that apply to wildlife interaction, pre-inspection practices, and what to do when encounter wildlife. And it's basically a structure that we would have to then add our local information as applicable. For example, when you encounter wildlife, there's 3 points. Provide contact information for local qualified biologists that can assist with projects. So we would need to provide that in our blurb to the public. Provide contact information for wildlife rehabilitation resources, like wildlife images or something. And she also said her website has lists of tree care professionals who have done the training and biologists who are also trained in this area. So I thought it might be something that either we do as like a little subcommittee or something, or I'm not sure how, Aaron, you think it might be best to develop some succinct wording that we could include on the application so that people can at least have it on their radar that, oh yeah, I'm encountering an animal. There was something about that on the application. And then, you know, they can, you know, come put a hold on operations. It would have prevented that whole situation on Oak Street where a raccoon had to leap from 50 feet in the air to the ground.
If you wanted to work with another member of the commission and come up with a one pager and then bring it to the commission at large with a recommendation that, hey, here's a one pager that the tree commission has put together, voted on, and that could very easily be included as a handout with approved applications. So yeah, I mean, if you could either work on that on your own or work on it in partnership with another commissioner, so long as you don't accidentally make a quorum, which is pretty hard to do right now. And then, you know, when you have a product that is ready for prime time, you know, ask the chair to put it on the agenda for review, and then the commission could vote on it. And I can only imagine that if it came out of the commission with approval, I would still need to run it by the staff advisor, but I have no reason to believe that that wouldn't be met with positively.
Okay. Any thoughts from all you guys?
That sounds like a great path, but Aaron suggested just kind of boil it down. If we've got something on paper, then we can start parsing it out.
And it doesn't even need to be a whole pager. I mean, it could be a half page that, you know, just gets added out with and whatever it needs to be.
Okay. Great. Well, anyone want to do a Zoom with me at some point and go over this? I mean, it would be really handy for me to have like kind of practical someone who's, you know, working in the field to kind of counter any of my silly suggestions.
That would probably be taken care of when you brought it in front of the commission. I would think.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
that would be the starting point. Then you'll have, you know, three arborists that can weigh in on it with you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will work on this then. And can I, Aaron, email it out to you at some point and get feedback during the month so that we can get this moving a bit faster?
Yeah. So what I always recommend to, you know, it's not like you guys can't, there's not a prohibition on communication. What there is you need to make sure that you aren't getting into an electronic quorum where everyone's communicating directly. And so what I always tell my commission members is that, Kat, if you want to send an email out to the rest of the commission, address it to me, and then BCC Eric, Chris, and Asa. And so Eric, Chris, and Asa will all see an email that shows up in their inbox that is addressed to me. And when they hit reply, if they do, it'll come to me. Or conversely, you don't need to send it to me. You can also send it to yourself. Kat sends an email to Kat and BCCs all of these people. And that way, if anyone hits reply all, the only thing that happens is it comes back to you.
Oh, okay. It's a reply all problem.
Yeah. So you could put together a document and say, hey, Tree Commission, what do you think about this? Address it to yourself, but send it to everyone else BCC. They will each individually receive it, and then they can reply to you. And that's totally in bounds.
Okay, cool. Got it. Well, I will work on this then.
Okay, thanks for that, Kat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Election of officers, is that?
You know, at this point, Asa isn't a part of the call right now. We've been putting it off because we were hoping that we would have more tree commissioners. Did anyone, was someone going to reach out to Mike Oxendine to see if he might have an interest?
I pose it to him. I think he's pretty engaged in talent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did too, and he was like, I'm busy.
Yeah, no, I understand it. I mean, I'm not sure how to make that go. In the Public Art Commission, where I currently have a couple of vacancies, the chair and another commissioner have been actively, you know, recruiting commissioners to onboard, and then, you know, once they have someone who's excited about it, taking them to the mayor basically for an interview. Obviously, we just had an election. We're going to have a new mayor in January. I'm not sure if the current mayor's not doing appointments right now in the interim or what, but it would be great to get some more commissioners on so we aren't squeaking by for a quorum each time.
Yeah.
I hit up Jane while she was here. I tried recruiting her.
So I guess we probably don't need to vote on it, but probably just general agreement to table that to a. In fact, I'll go ahead and put it under old business moving forward.
Okay.
Sounds good. Okay. Anything else, gang?
Nothing for me.
Okay.
Nothing for me.
Sorry for the technical challenges at the top of the meeting, everyone. We'll try not to repeat that again.
Bound to happen.
Yeah.
Got it. I appreciate what you do. I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
I mean it.
Tough new world to navigate, as well as be the scapegoat for dead trees. Punching back.
Do we have, we do have the ability to chat in these meetings. I don't know.
No.
We don't?
The problem with that is that creates a problem with Oregon public meeting law. So it's specifically we have been directed to not be using the chat.
I was just because, you know, Asa was having trouble communicating with us and I thought that might be a way to, if he replies all to, if he texts everyone, chats to everyone, but
no chats.
No.
All right. Well, it was good to see everyone.
Yeah.
You guys too, 7:24. We're adjourned.
All right.
Okay. See everyone.
Stay well.
Bye.
Ciao.